Yeah, in the end, had pretty good pace on JB anyway at the end of the first stint. He went one lap shorter than us, which is, yeah, no problem there with the strategy. Then we had a bad first pit stop. Obviously, we lost a lot of time with that first stop, and then that put us on the back foot, and I got the car back onto the back of him, but we were just out of track position by then, so that's where we lost the podium.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 537, November 17th, 2011. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Google Ads. Google Ads get you the goodies you want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, the United States Grand Prix at Austin, Texas, fading away into the sunset. Kubica, not likely to return in a Renault, that is. Pirelli says there's nothing wrong with our tires. And of course, go to the F1 Weekly front page for the 2011 podcast survey. It helps us gather data to see where we go in 2012. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the Connecticut kid himself, Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself.
Outstanding. One more Grand Prix to go. But of course, the big news, and we'll talk about Abu Dhabi, but the big news is it looks like the circuit of the Americas is beginning to flounder. And people always forget, when Bernie speaks, he often speaks about what he knows. And he knows a lot.
Well, if he frankly hasn't sent them a finalized contract,
correct,
then him saying that they're not going to be done in time is pretty much a given.
Yeah, but there's also some infighting, and now the controller of Texas, I believe, is not willing to advance them any monies from the $25 million promised. Therefore, all work has stopped as of Tuesday, November 15th. Most likely, there's going to be problems, and when you have delays, even a few days, it takes a few days to get back up to speed, and the chances of this ever happening are becoming nil. And don't forget, there was supposed to be a MotoGP race at this track as well. It looked great on paper, but I think the biggest problem is New Jersey, New Jersey, and New Jersey.
The biggest problem is Bernie Ecclestone basically playing his little magic games with, okay, here, write me a big fat check and I'll bring you a race. But, oh, by the way, here's my buddy Herman. He'll design it for you. And I'm probably getting a kickback because I actually own Tilkey's design firm. I don't know, I'm a little bit jaded on the whole Bernie Ecclestone thing, especially considering, you know, you get people like Korea who've ponied up a bunch of money and now are basically going to be on the outs. Turkey, hey, pay me a bunch of money.
Well, Turkey
have one of these runoff races.
Turkey could be back since Austin looks to be going away.
Right, and also they were also saying they were first in line to take up Korea's spot too.
Correct. So we'll see what happens. But trust me, I'm very disappointed.
I wonder if he'll be able to do the same thing to the Russians, or will the Russian mob go after him?
No, they couldn't do that to the Russians because Putin already test drove a Formula One car. He's the smart one. But still, very disappointing and not too unbelievable.
I was looking forward to going to Austin. It's a kick-ass town.
I was too, but the problem with anything Formula One now is tainted a la US F1. Ever since that fiasco, everything else needs to jump hoops to be convincing.
Yeah. Well, this one was, you know, they were actually building a track.
Not only that, but Red Bull brought a car out there with David Coulthard. They drove the track, even though it was all dirt, and it was amusing. It was interesting, but it showed some interest. They had the Red Bull Renault Formula One car, RB6, I believe, on display in downtown Austin. I mean, they were building it up. The promo was starting to happen. People were looking forward to it. And I know a lot of people that tried to get tickets, and that was never happening. And I know you think people were maybe jumping the gun, but still, most venues sell tickets a year ahead of time.
And yeah, well, that means they would be going on sale right about now.
Correcto. But that doesn't seem to be happening. So it is a huge disappointment. And Bernie Ecclestone says he's ready to axe the Austin Grand Prix in what he calls internal disputes between the race organizers. And they say, we've done everything we bloody well can to make this race happen, Ecclestone said to the press a couple of days ago when asked whether the race was in danger of being dropped. He says, yes, it will be for sure 100%. That's pretty disappointing, isn't it?
For sure it will be dropped?
That's what he says. And when
In other words, I'm never sending you that contract that you guys were asking me for on Tuesday.
In other words, he's in full control, Steve. At what age is he? 575? That's just the way it is.
I think his sponsors would be kicking on him because most of them are... This has got... The United States is their largest market.
The biggest problem is Ecclestone says that he's yet to receive a guaranteed payment from COTA and has given them 3 weeks to resolve the situation.
Well, it's always the money.
Ecclestone says, quote, we had an agreement with Full Throttle Productions. Everything was signed and sealed, but we kept putting things off, like the dates, various letters of credit, and things that should have been done, but nothing ever happened. In other words, there was a lot of dropping the ball on the other side of the court. And I'm not blaming Bernie on this one, Stephen.
No, I'm starting to say it sounds a lot like basically the promoters were waiting for someone to pay them or money to come in, monies to come in. They probably should have paid Bernie instead of putting money into the track.
Exactly. So anyway, let's go talk about Abu Dhabi. I thought it was a good race. It was interesting. Qualifying, once again, Rubinho. Engine problems.
Sergio Perez. Engine problems.
I know. Well, it's the end of the season. You know, they're down to their last...
These guys are down to their last...
Well, yeah, they're using their ninth engine.
For the first time ever.
So,
both Williams will start from the back row.
Yeah, it was sad, but what can you do? But I have to admit, it was exciting to watch the final few minutes. And for sure, I thought Lewis Hamilton would get pole position. He was hot all weekend. Both McLarens were very fast.
I thought he had it.
I thought he had it, too. And, of course, Vettel, once again...
gets that one golden lap.
He digs deep down in the guttural area.
Just nails it.
It's just unbelievable. Yes, Sebastian Vettel does get pole. 14th pole of the season. And it's good morning, Nigel Mansell, or whatever they said to him of beating Nigel Mansell's record of 14 poles in one season.
Pretty impressive.
It is very impressive, especially for a 24-year-old. Anyway, let's go right to the race. Soft and medium compounds. 10-grid penalty for Pastor Maldonado, as you said, for another engine. And guess what, Stephen? No rain. Are you stunned or what?
What about sandstorm? High humidity.
No sandstorms, no rain. And it's a great-looking track at night, you have to admit. I mean, the lighting.
The cars are really pretty.
Yeah, everybody's wearing those clear visors so we could see their eyes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a great facility, and like I said in the previous podcast, I would love to have a chance to go there, and maybe next year we'll see what happens if we sell enough calendars, Steve. Buy some calendars.
Buy calendars. Bye, anyway. Bye.
Yeah, great start.
We're not going to Austin, so we got to find another place to go.
Yeah, we're not going to Austin, so we are saving some money there, thank goodness. But let's go right to the start of the race. The red lights go out. Fantastic start by Sebastian Vettel. McLarens do well. Schumacher does well. It was a wunderbar start until...
Well, Sebastian Vettel starting to run away from the field like he seems to always do at the start of the race.
I mean, his lead was substantial by the time he hit the third corner.
Yeah, it apparently there was something near that corner that...
Well... You know, Lewis Hamilton was spotted at the chapel.
Yeah.
The DNF chapel was very, very busy Sunday morning.
They were saying, though, that during the GP2 race that there were some incidents in that area.
Mm-hmm. On the curbs?
In that section of the track, and that possibly he picked up a shard of carbon fiber that wasn't picked up by the
people. Well,
but it's hard to say, you know.
But how quickly the puncture occurred. I can see a puncture where, you know, by the third or fourth corner, he knows he's got a puncture. But instantaneous release of air out of a tire like that, to me, sounds like it's separated from the rim.
Yeah, it's always possible. Maybe he just got it just right on that curb to pull it off. But it was just really kind of one of those weird, freaky accidents.
Yes, and Lewis Hamilton, of course, when he saw Vettel go off, he finally said to himself, after all that bad karma, that it's finally paying off, and he took the lead, and what a great drive it was. Fernando Alonso also outstanding drive, passing Jenson Button. Michael Schumacher and Nico Rosberg were dicing it up for P6. Bruno Senna pits on the first lap to change tires. Sebastian Vettel pits. By the time he gets to the pits, it's game over. Sebastian Vettel with a DNF.
Yeah, it looked like he broke something in a hub assembly on the way around the track, which not surprising considering he basically had to drive almost the entire track to get back to the pit lane. On a flat tire just means you're beating the crap out of the back of the car.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton is banging in fast laps. Lap 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then Fernando, lap 6, puts in a fast lap with a 146.4. Jenson Button with a 146.3 on the 7th lap. And we can see from the cameras that Sebastian Vettel is on a laptop checking data to see what happened to his car. He's not freaking out in the back like a baby. He's not like Mika Hakkinen crying in the bushes. It's very impressive.
It's kind of like, really, all he had going riding on this race were more records.
I know, but that's, well, he's got to do something. I mean, we all have our hobbies, Stephen.
Yeah, Sebastian Vettel this season has been setting records.
So it was fascinating. Lewis Hamilton starts banging out more laps. Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Buemi passes Paul DiResta. Then Paul DiResta repasses. And I have to admit, you know what? The DRS zones, and we saw this at other tracks. You make a pass, the DRS zone has come up, and then the pass is retaken. In other words, lots of artificial passing. Is it meaningless, Stephen? Does it add excitement if you know it's not really real? It's a faux pass.
It depends on how the pass is made.
Now,
if it's an interestingly executed pass, then sure, it's nice and fun. But it does kind of create artificial passing. Because a lot of times you'll end up with a guy who passes in the DRS this lap, and then the next lap the guy passes him back in the DRS because the cars are so evenly matched, that's the only advantage that they're getting.
Exactly. So it's fascinating, but yeah, that's my new thought of the day. Are the faux passes faux pas? Thank you, Stephen. This is what I do in my spare time. And it continues. Not an exciting track, but I love how the track looks, and I'm really glad for the McLarens. And Fernando Alonso, I have to admit, was really driving a very strong second spot.
He ran a really good race. That pass that he put on Jens in the early part of the race was pretty stout. And the fact that Jens couldn't get back past him when looking at Lewis's car, that Jens probably had maybe a faster car. But, there's Fernando and his 3/10.
Lap 17, everybody pits, basically. Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Jenson Button, Adrian Sutil, Michael Schumacher, Heikki Kovalainen. Someone we really don't speak about too much these days, do we?
No, we don't speak much about anybody. Even like D'Ambrosio, it's like... Yeah.
And Timo Glock.
Did they race? Were they in the race?
Those are tail enders.
Usually the only time their name comes up is when they fall out of the race.
Terrible stop for Mark Webber on lap 17. Very slow. His bad karma continues at Red Bull, even if Vettel is gone.
I know, he's got an opportunity to leapfrog, run a race without Vettel in it, and just can't do it. It's been kind of that season for him. He's never really gotten off the dime. He gets a good qualifying, he can't get off the line. He gets off the line well, and then there's a faux pas in the pits, or he gets bumped at the wrong moment.
You find yourself saying faux pas now. Exactly. See what happens? That's called the power of suggestion. God, I love it.
Send us money, send us money, send us money.
Lap 19, Sebastian Buemi pits. He's out with rear suspension damage. And Paul DeRosa is doing a one-stopper. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's getting passed by some people, but he knows, he's thinking ahead. He knows, it's cool, because I'm only stopping once.
As long as they don't get more than 23 seconds ahead of me.
But still, I think Force India's strategy is working pretty good. Of course, Paul DeRosa didn't put in a lap for qualifying. I had a full set of tires. I think Adrian Sutil put in one lap in Q3. But Force India has
been, DeRosa has all the tires he can use, but then does a one-stop strategy.
Yeah. What can I tell you, Steven? Okay. That's the bizarre world we live in. But still,
Formula One in the modern era.
You gotta love it. Anyway, lap 24, Bruno Senna passes Timo Glock for P16. Pathetic. I don't care. I think Senna's had his chance to shine, and he's really not showing me anything.
He's had one or two good races, but he really hasn't had much since. The first race he had at Spa, he looked decent. And since then, he's kind of been mediocre.
Not only that, I think he's mediocre. Let's call those drives good. We need great drives. This team was really looking strong, not only at the beginning of this season, but last year with Robert Kubica. Let's talk about Robert Kubica. It's been in the press. He's not coming back to Renault. He doesn't want to go back to this junk. It's not even called Renault anymore. It's no longer a works team. It's going to be called simply Lotus. They lack cash, for sure. And Ferrari is going to need a driver in 2013 because Massa is...
not going to be renewed.
Yeah, but Massa will be there next year in 2012. So it's looking more and more like Robert Kubica is being told to take your time, get that muscle back up. No sense rushing back into this. And you have a seat along your best buddy, Fernando Alonso. And those two guys get along great.
Mark Webber's contract's up too, isn't it?
Yeah, but Mark Webber's long in the tooth.
No, but I'm thinking that Kubica could be in beside Sebastian.
No, I don't believe that. They have some young guns, especially when you look at the numbers in Abu Dhabi this week with all the young drivers. And I'm sure Nasser's going to have some data on this. Jean-Éric Vergne has been outstanding at the top of the timesheets both days. Yeah, Jean-Éric Vergne is going to be in a car next year. He's a hot commodity.
Yeah, he'll probably be in a Toro Rosso, and I don't see them moving up either of the drivers they have there now.
He's in a Toro Rosso,
Red Bull more likely to bring in an experienced veteran driver.
Well, I think Éric Vergne will be in a Red Bull in 2013 alongside Sebastian Vettel. So
that's 2013 too. Michael Schumacher's contract's up.
That's true.
Could put him in a Kubica in a Mercedes.
Yep. It's going to be pretty exciting, but I think he'll go to Ferrari because he loves Fernando. They get along great. These are the things.
No, but then there's one other small, tiny, itty-bitty, little, tiny thing that would be written into that contract.
What's that? Number two?
You're number two.
Sacré bleu! But maybe they'll sneak it in a language that Robert can't read.
Or just sign it, Robert. Love driving for Ferrari.
Listen, I read all this stuff on the internet, and I believe most of it, Steven. Look at me. That's why I'm here today. But anyway, great race. On lap 27, the team tells Felipe Massa, you have a chance to pass Jenson Button, but it's not going to happen.
Fernando is faster than you.
Yeah, blah, blah. But all in all, a lot of excitement, a great race, and a great win for Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Who needed it. At this very moment, and his mommy's at the track. He dedicates the win to mommy, and I would have done the same thing because my mommy is very important to moi.
Especially if you've got her there at the track, you kind of got
it. Absolutely. So it was an exciting race, and I thought Fernando Alonso put in another great drive where that Ferrari really had no place being in second that close to the leader, really. He's wringing the neck out of that car.
Did he get held up by Petrov?
No, he didn't. Petrov, both Renaults were pathetic. Yeah. They need to regroup and come
that
up.
That car's just been kind of sliding and sliding and sliding.
Senna is putting in good drives. Great. He finishes the race. That's fine. But we need great drives.
There's a lot of good drivers on this grid.
You can't put up with this. Romain Grosjean needs another chance. He needs to get in there. Vitaly Petrov, the problem with him, he brings in a lot of cash, and the team needs a lot of cash. Now, Senna brings in a little bit of cash, but it's not going to cut the mustard.
No.
So we'll see what happens. But fantastic race. I enjoy watching Abu Dhabi. It was very, very fun. Paul McCartney was there, interviewed by the BBC, and that was very refreshing. They were talking about George Harrison attending Formula One races in the past. And towards the end, as they were saying goodbye, Eddie Jordan accidentally called Paul George. So, but he didn't call him Ringo, because that would have been a definite no-no.
Yeah.
But that's
Paul,
just
George.
That's just my Beatles political statement of the week. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding motorsports mondial. We're going to talk about Abu Dhabi, all these young drivers, and which one is going to float up to the top. We'll be back after this brief message from Bell Auto Care.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the dude himself, Nasser Hamid.
Good evening, Mr. Mansell, goodbye, Mr. Vettel, and racing regards to rest of humanity. Sebastian Loeb wins his 8th World Rally Championship, helter-skelter in the final lap of GP2 sprint race, and by the time NASCAR got to Phoenix, F1 Weekly crew was sleeping. And who can blame them, Mr. Rogers?
That's true. But still, very exciting. And I'm calling Sebastian Loeb now, I call him the Loebster.
Lobster?
Yeah.
Wow, that's very impressive. I thought you were going to call him like a top Alsatian dog.
No.
Okay, we start with Formula One and Abu Dhabi GP. Abu Dhabi is the short form for Abu Dhabi. Hemi wins for Mommy, which was very nice. Third win of the season for Lewis Hamilton is victory number 175 for McLaren. Very impressive. A team started by Bruce in 1965 took its first GP win with him driving at Spa. I believe the year was 1968, and that made him only the third man to win in a car built by the driver, and others, of course, being Dan Gurney from Newport Beach, California, and Jack Brabham from way down under, Australia.
Of course.
None, though, running rock solid as a Burlington Northern freight train again appeared on the podium in second place. And people always say that to me, well, Nando was always there.
He's always there.
Which is very impressive. Argens came in third for the third time in Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi. Mark Webber was fourth ahead of Massa in fifth. Both are singing the blues and will have one more chance in 2 weeks to get out of muddy waters of a winless season. Do you think Mark Webber will win a race this season?
No.
I had a feeling that if...
He can't even get on the podium, Nasser.
That is very sad. I think Mr. Vettel having a, you know, DNF... because of the tire puncture or whatever on the opening lap, I think he's going to be in a rage to go and win the race, final race.
He's going to prove it to Pirelli and everybody else.
Lewis Hamilton would like to win, so he has more wins than the team's number one driver. Button, you know, he wants to win. So I feel very bad for Mark Webber to go winless against a your teammate who has just set new record after new record. It's very sad.
And obviously a good car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no kidding. And I've been watching the difference between, you know, like the difference is pretty obvious in times, practice, race, qualifying between Vettel and Mark Webber and between Nando and his Bambino, which is pretty sad. But, you know, what are you going to do?
But that's racing.
That's racing, yep. For the first time in the up-and-down life of Williams' team, both cars started from the last row of the grid. Now, here's some fastest lap times of teammates, and just as a, you know, information. Button, 143.154, compared to Hamilton's best of 143.461. And it was mentioned many times that Hamilton's time in the Q2 was faster than Vettel's lap time. So pretty good. Good to see Lewis Hamilton back on the, you know, winning groove. And here's your man, Alonso, 143.914 compared to Massa at 144.288. Rosberg,
three tenths.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Rosberg, 143.993 compared to Schumacher's time of 144.916. And Rosberg was quoted as saying after re-signing with the Mercedes team that he look forward to leading the team next year. So looks like
love it.
Dishes are done for Michael Schumacher. Who would have thought? Paul Di Resta, 144.120 compared to Sutil's 144.709. That's a big difference.
Half a
second. Kobayashi had the fourth fastest lap of the race at 143.521, while Perez was clocked at 144.566. You know, Kobayashi has really come under the spell of Sergio Perez. You don't hear much of, even though he's a very good driver and very exciting driver, but Perez has really done a very, very impressive job. For me, he's the rookie of the year. What say you?
I absolutely agree. Very impressive. Always on form. Often in the top 10. And he came out of nowhere. Yeah. Blew us all away.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. And he keeps himself very quiet. And he certainly has subdued the Kamikaze Kid himself.
Yeah, that is no question about it. And without any creating any team problems or dividing
exactly.
The team. It's not divide and conquer like a lot of drivers. Very, very impressive. And actually, they were mentioning on the... See, when Sergio Perez last year won a lot of GP2 races, I was like, Romain Grosjean is not there. Nico Hülkenberg is not there. The top dog is Pastor Maldonado. So how good he can really be. But he has done a tremendous job this year. I frankly thought, and I even said it a few times, I did not even see him. And I said that because of his past performances in different series, not for any personal ill will, that he may not even see the season till the end. But good for him, muy bueno for him. He's from Guadalajara. So hopefully, you know, one day we will drive down there. We'll take the Tijuana taxi, pom pom, and go and do an interview with him and Señor Esteban Gutierrez. Esteban Gutierrez will be in Mexico in Monterrey the first 10 days of December, and we'll see what happens. I might do a phone interview with him if I cannot hop on a big old jetliner. Okay, moving on to GP2, Hapidos, non-championship race. They did this race because they canceled the GP2 Asia Series, which was really going nowhere. First feature race, you know, when they started GP2 Asia, the A1GP thing was going on, so it was like, you know, they're trying to come. And the whole idea, they wanted to see local drivers from the region, and I was like, local drivers in GP2, what is the feeder series in Bahrain or Saudi Arabia?
No,
or UAE?
The only reason they ran GP2 Asia was to counter the other series and just put a Formula One related race in the news at the same time to kind of dilute the water.
Yeah, and they even raced in Malaysia, Indonesia, but, you know, now they've pulled the plug. But they're going to do an extended season of GP2 next year, so which is good. It was very good when they had to do the canceled Bahrain race. The GP2 Asia race took place in Imola, Italy. That was pretty fantastic. Very nice track. Okay, first feature race victory for Swiss driver Fabio Laimer. He has won before, but sprint races. He started from pole and finished second, finished ahead of Brazilian Luiz Razia and British driver Jolyon Palmer, son of Dr. Jonathan Palmer, and he was third. Now, this is another kid. You know, he came through Fabio Laimer, that is, through Formula Master. He won the championship with 10-11 cars in his second year, which was Alexander Rossi's first year, and Fabio Laimer really dominated that. And he has already done two seasons of GP2, and he's competitive, but it's not like the Romain Grosjean thing or Nico Hülkenberg, like always on the podium. But in this F1 testing going on, he's doing pretty decent. So you have to give the man a chance to see what he can do. The sprint race, impressive victory for English driver James Calado on his first GP2 weekend, and I believe he was second in this year's GP3 series. Swede Marcus Ericsson was a close second, and third was your homeboy, Tom Dillman. All hell broke loose behind them in the closing laps as Lima tried to pass Alexander Rossi. It was free-for-all on the last lap, worth watching on YouTube, and I know you did not see this, but I would highly recommend check it out. You will not be disappointed. And the biggest beneficiary was Esteban Gutierrez, who had started from basically back of the grid and managed to squeeze through to claim fifth position. It was very exciting. WRC World Rally Championship, Sebastian Loeb has now won more world championships than Michael Schumacher. And all his championships have come in a row, which is very, even more impressive. Now, in the last rally...
You forgot the important part. All with Citroën.
All with Citroën. That is very true. Complete Francais package. He was in... The last rally was Rally GB, where he did not finish. But what he benefited from was his main challenger, Mikko Hirvonen, also dropped out. And also DNF was Mr. Kimi Raikkonen, who is looks like on his way back to Formula One.
Looks like it.
Yeah. I don't think he will be in WRC. He didn't like too much because they fined him, I think, $25,000 or something for not going to the Rally Australia.
Well, they made him pay the fine in ice cream.
Oh, really? That really hurt his feeling. Yeah. Rally winner was Jari Matti Latvala of Finlandia, his first victory of the season. In 2012, this was kind of a surprise. Loeb will have Hirvonen as his teammate at Citroën, while Sébastien Ogier...
I have to admit, that was a big surprise to me, too.
Yeah, and Ogier may be headed for the Blue Oval, also known as...
Well, Ford. Where else is he going to go? Mitsubishi?
And there's Skoda also. And there's me, there you go.
Yeah, but these people want to win, Nasser!
Skoda coming back next year?
I don't know. It's a Volkswagen program, so maybe they'll come back. Volkswagen is coming back.
I think they run under Volkswagen.
Yeah. Volkswagen Polo. Nice looking car. But maybe it looks pretty good, too.
But still a fantastic season for Sebastian Loeb. And to be honest with you, I mean, I know they've signed Hirvonen to team up with the Loebster next year. But, I mean, how long is the Loebster going to continue?
He should go out on top, just retire now, and they should have kept Ogier. He started out with a Citroën team as a mechanic. So he's come, and he was doing to Sebastian Loeb what Jorge Lorenzo was doing to Valentino Rossi and Yamaha MotoGP team.
Well, you know, I started out at F1 Weekly as the janitor.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know.
Well, what are you now? The executive janitor?
Correct.
Very good. Congrats.
He's still a janitor, but he's also the host.
Yeah. You're my hero. Okay, more French win. Peugeot wins in China. The season finale of the Intercontinental Le Mans Series took place at Zhuhai. Peugeot 1-2 led by Sébastien Bourdais and Anthony Davidson over Frank Montani. Frank Montani is a very cool guy.
He is. Pretty mellow, approachable, hip dude.
Yeah, Mr. Brazier and I met him, and he was very cool. And Stéphane Sarrazin. I would like to meet Stéphane Sarrazin because
he does everything.
Yeah, Formula One, sports cars, rallying, and so would like to see him someday. Audi of Timo Bernhard and Michael Fassler was third. Fourth in a Toyota-powered, as we all know, Toyota is back at Le Mans now. Fourth in a Toyota-powered Rebellion Lola was Neil Jani. His Pepito is from Gujarat, India, where the most common last name is Patel. And if you look at any motel or a lot of hotel chains, who the owner in America is, most of the time it's Patel, P-A-T-E-L. And they are not related to Patelco, which is the Pacific Telesis Credit Union, just so you know.
Thank you, Nasser. I did get a little bewildered just for a moment there.
Yeah. I'm here to help. And his co-driver was Nicolas Prost. His Papito knew how to win races and championships and Formula Uno. You know, the guy who's really impressed with Alain Prost is Mr. Hugh Deschenok of Orica. He says to me that, you know, I asked him, you know, what should young drivers do who are 15, 16 years old? What should be their career path? And he goes, well, they should do what Alain Prost did and come to the track and work on the car and, you know, build your career step by step and not be 15 years old and show up at a track with a lawyer and a manager.
You know, that's a very good point, though. These young drivers are spoiled.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you, I'm not going to take any names. I've heard from quite a few team owners, like in, you know, series below Formula One and GP2, how teenagers are showing up with attorneys and, you know, just like completely ridiculous.
And a lot of times the parents are at fault.
Oh, yeah. Pushy parents, of course.
Yeah, well, typically attorneys don't talk to teenagers. It's the parents that have talked to the attorney and sent them to the track with the child.
Yeah. Now we come to your favorite series, sir.
Le NASCAR.
Casey Kane from Enumclaw, Washington, gave Red Bull their first Sprint Cup victory at Phoenix. Red Bull is pulling the plug on their NASCAR team at the end of the season, so if you want to buy a team in NASCAR, here is your opportunity.
The F1 Weekly NASCAR team?
Can you believe that?
Man, that would be the topper.
Then you can start by saying, boogity, 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 let's go podcasting, boys.
Yeah, and we get free jerky and stuff.
That perky jerky on top of that.
This is just a dream come true, Nasser.
And let me just tell you, I don't know if you ever seen Brooke Gordon, the ex-wife of Jeff Gordon. The NASCAR race queens are very, very super soft and easy on the eyes, even if you're wearing glasses.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, so Red Bull has learned the hard way, and I feel sorry for them, that once you try PBR at Pocono International Raceway and or Budweiser at the Bristol Bullring, there is no going back to the funky taste of Red Bull. So let's see who buys the team and what happens to it. Carl Edwards was second and Tony Stewart was third, and these two Utes will decide the championship in the season finale at Homestead, Florida this weekend. Are you watching?
Oh, are you kidding?
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
It's a must.
I don't miss any of this stuff.
Good. The NASCAR season is coming to an end just before turkey dinner, but they will be racing again in February to stay a leg ahead of the competition. And Moa is hoping and planning to be at Daytona, not in February, but in January for the Rolex 24 Hours. Talk about Swiss timing. And the main reason I want to go there is I am told and hoping that Felipe Nasr will be taking part in one of the races as the part of the Sunoco challenge they had. He was one of the winners. So it'll be great to see him again and his, dad and uncle, who were so nice to me when I met them in Brasilia. Plus, you know, Rolex 24-hour brings a lot of people. And the crowd will be like 5% of what it would be on NASCAR, you know, Daytona 500. So it'll be easier to move around and go and check out the banking also. Back to ABDAB. The Young Driver Test Program is underway this week. Not surprisingly, driver with the best car had the fastest time on the opening days, I should say. That would be Red Bull and Jean-Éric Bouin. He is looking more and more to send either Buemi or Alguersuari on a gardening leave. In Formula One, gardening leave for racing drivers mean only one thing. The autumn leaves drift by my window. One of your favorites?
Absolutely. Love that song.
Ah, sure. Okay, Jules Bianchi has also gone fast in a Ferrari. He was second fastest on Wednesday. He is, of course, managed by Nicola Todd, who is also managing Felipe Massa and Pastor Maldonado and quite a few young drivers. Aro Vainio from Fernandia is also one of them. And so Nicola Todd and Jules Bianchi are trying to find a seat in F1 and avoid doing a third year in GP2. In the words of Jules Bianchi himself, you are finished if you don't win the GP2 championship in your third year. Past two seasons, he was third on both occasions. Charles Pic is testing with Virgin Marussia and will likely drive for them in 2000. I think it's a pretty much done deal now.
It looked like it. I think he's signed.
Yeah, he has the money, and Olivier Panis is helping the negotiations.
And Pic's good.
Yeah, Charles Pic is pretty good. You know, one thing I do recall, one day I was watching one of those Formula Renault races, and I think it was either him or his brother Arthur. He collided with a car and went up in the air like Weber at Valencia. And the guy and the commentator goes, "Oh, we have a flying pig." That was pretty funny, I think.
That's just not right, Nasser.
Oh, that's the way it is, Clark. Okay, now what will happen in 2012? The team will lose its virginity and will simply be called Marussia, a Russian sports car manufacturer. Do you think they will last longer than Spyker?
I think they will. And just because of the name change doesn't mean that there won't be Virgin money coming in still.
Yeah.
But this is weaning off the Virgin.
Weaning off aversion.
Yes.
Wow, sounds very good.
Yeah, thank you. You know, that's what we do here.
Yeah, you're very creative.
Not only that, but going into Russia, is it 2012 or 2013?
2013.
Yeah, with Russia coming up on the calendar in a year or two, it'll be good for them.
Is it 2013 or 2012?
I think it's 2013.
It's the same. Yeah.
They have the option. They may do it because they have a Winter Olympics also.
Yeah,
in
Sochi.
Yeah,
correct. The Winter Olympics.
Okay, then it is 2013. Yeah. Keep up the good work, Stephen.
Okay. You know, I would like to go to that race.
Me too.
Sochi is in the summer capital of Russia.
I'd love it.
Yeah, it's nice. And, you know, it's not too far from Turkey and Greece. Greece, you can go there on a bargain now, as you know. So, anyway, Valtteri Bottas and Mirko Bortolotti are testing with Williams, Alexander Rossi with Team Lotus, and Esteban Gutierrez with Sauber, where he is already a test and reserve driver. And Bottas is, of course, managed by one of the principals of Williams Racing now. And Mirko Bortolotti, who is a friend, I'm very pleased to say, of F1 Weekly, he is getting this drive because he won the F2 championship. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands next season. F1 Mess in Tejas. Looks like Ken Anderson and Peter Windsor have entered the project. The god of Formula One, Lord Ecclestone, has expressed his displeasure and construction is now kaput. This was very interesting. Turns out Tavo Hellman is only the promoter and has nothing to do with the Circuit of Americas, but hold the right, or did held the right to the F1 race there, which I believe, on a statement from Bernie Ecclestone, has been canceled because he's in breach of his contract. So now the circuit, it's one of those typical things, you know. The circuit people, Circuit of Americas, are contacting Bernie Ecclestone, hey, why don't you sign a contract with us? And you know what Bernie says, show me the money, baby. But, you know, I have to say, the smart state of Texas is saying, we ain't giving no money till the race takes place. Tavo's friendship with Bernie got him the contract. You know, his father was actually friends with Bernie Ecclestone, and Tavo was a Bambino. But Bernie's business acumen may see him witness the Texas chainsaw murder of his motorsport dream. Simple math without the F1. You know, we have the F1 Weekly abacus, which you take out to calculate the NASCAR points. You don't need that for this thing. F1 race in Texas, $25 million to a billionaire from the taxpayers. Doesn't sound very encouraging. F1 race in Nueva Jersey, one billionaire pays another billionaire. Race takes place in the shadows of Manhattan skyscrapers. Cost of coast-to-coast airfare, if you're flying from here to New York, is cheaper than going south by southwest. And that really is going to hurt the Texas agenda. You really don't need an MBA from William and Mary to figure out which race will succeed. And it you know what, I got to tell you something. It's like when Malaysia signed a contract with, that was the first thing that came to my mind, with Bernie Ecclestone. If ever there was going to be a Grand Prix in Singapore, it will have, more people will go to Singapore. It's just, you know, I've never been there, but anybody who has been there comes back very, very impressed.
It's more of a destination.
Yeah, and so he for him to get a race in Texas, obviously, if he had asked for a no-compete clause in other 49 states, Bernie probably would not give it to him. But he should have known that when you're dealing with somebody like Bernie Ecclestone, this is a very, very strong possibility. And now that it has happened, it's very sad. And, you know, now that Bernie is openly talking about it, I will be very surprised if this race takes place. Because what his comment was, I was reading it, I think it's on ESPN F1, that what we need is a letter of credit, and he said it. He's quoted as saying that letter of credit is given for on behalf of people who have money, and these people are not going to get a dime from Texas State, as they should not, unless they can make it happen. So I think it's time to invite Ken Anderson and tell everybody most of the construction technology comes from America or some other statement. But it's sad, you know. I mean,
especially for us who live here.
I mean, you know, there are a lot of racing fans here. We were planning to go there and watch this thing, but at least hopefully there will be a race somewhere not too far away from California within the US of A. Okay, finally, some more tragic news. This was very bad. Tragedy in Tin Top Race Series in Argentina. Fatal accident in Balcarce at the Juan Manuel Fangio Autodromo took the life of young Argentine driver Guido Falaschi. He went off trying to avoid a spinning car and was thrown back on the track after hitting a tire wall. He was hit by two of the cars. The accident, you know, this is really, really pisser. The accident happened on the final lap.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's an our condolences to the Falaschi family.
That's our third one.
Yeah, actually, you know, a few weeks ago, after the death of Dan Weldon, like a 10, 11-year-old kid in Argentina was also killed in a kart race, go-kart race. So very, very sad. You okay, sir, there?
I'm trying. Okay. I'm suffering a little bit. The hors d'oeuvres we had.
Yeah, don't worry. NASCAR season will start in February.
Excellent.
It's never delayed or postponed.
Thank you, NAS, for another outstanding Motorsports Mundial. And now we're going to go right into the wrap-up, Steve, with 50 words on the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Take it away, Stephen.
First, from Sehesin, fellow goes pole, or fellow gets pole, fastest lap, bleeds every lap, and wins. Or he would have done if he could have kept all four tires full of air. Weber can't seem to capitalize, and maybe you can put that down to a team's tire strategy, and so Hamilton cleans up.
From Neon Zapper, Red Bull's off the podium, Hamilton doesn't crash, and Christian Horner imitates Mr. Bean.
Lap traffic. Vettel once again has the perfect race until turn two when my plans for a long nap are suddenly interrupted. Hamill does a great job of staying away from Massa and Alonso somehow stays ahead of Button. A surprisingly great race. Can't wait for Brazil.
From Yay, much more exciting than the two previous Abu Dhabi races. Thanks to the DRS, but as Grand Prix Diary tweeted, this DRS is like a boob job. An interesting concept, looks good, but ultimately, you know it's just fake. Shane Jensen's curse failed, as it was the only chance of a battle at the front. And finally, from Interraptor, now we know how Vettel can be stopped from winning. Only remaining question is, who put that invisible nail in front of pole position? Thanks, gentlemen, for your comments from the forum. The forum is extremely active, and people are now beginning to go on vacation. I think, I don't know, the numbers for Brazil could be down.
Number of
viewers. You know, when the championship's wrapped up, things sort of settle a little quicker than usual. But still, at least we have one more race, Nas. Can you believe how fast the season has gone by? It's unbelievable. I mean, I still remember when we were just chit-chatting about testing in January and stuff.
About the Bahrain Grand Prix?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
The non-happening of the Bear.
Yeah, so fascinating. Anyway, check out the listener survey on the front page. This helps us gauge what we're doing. And, of course, now we need to discuss the 2012 calendar, one and only, page 3, Nasser.
Okay, sir. Page 3, which would be February 2012, we have a picture of my favorite part of my favorite track, which would be Parabolica at Monza, and is a picture of Mr. Peter Gethin with his arm raised, and this was from the 1971 Italian Grand Prix, of course his one and only, and this is one of the greatest races of all time. You know, when Michael Schumacher did his stunt at Indy, where trying to do a dead heat and Barrichello won, on record that is the closest finish in motor racing. Before that it was this race, and to this day it's one of the fastest ever races. It was the last Formula One race at Monza before they put the chicanes and screwed up the track. But, you know, the track is still very, very fast. And the interesting thing about this race, because of slipstreaming, a lot of drivers, there were a lot of lead changes. And Mr. Howden Ganley, who was in the top five in this race and now lives here in Northern California, he told me that he had also led the race at certain times, but at different parts of the track. But since he was never leading at the start-finish line, he was never credited as leading the Italian Grand Prix. So going into Parabolica on the Ultima Giro, which will be final lap, there were like four or five drivers who were all looking for their first win. One guy goes in, Peter Gethin go. The guy going into Parabolica was passed by somebody else, and that third guy, which was Ronnie Peterson, he was coming out of Parabolica leading, and Gethin and him raced side by side. And it was a very, very close finish. And I remember many years ago, I was reading an interview with Peter Gethin. If you look at the picture of the guy waving the checkered flag, his arm is raised. And this was his comment, not mine. He said that he knew it was going to be a dead heat finish. And he said since it was Italy, he figured that if he raises his hand, he will be the winner. That's his comment, not mine. So it's a beautiful picture. And, of course, the whole calendar is one and only, celebrating one-hit wonders of Formula One. And while we are talking about the calendar, that is thanks to Mr. Mike Stater for his order, which flowed in today. So we thank him for that.
Fantastic, Nass. An outstanding job on the calendar. And let's sell some calendars this wonderful year of 2011.
And will you please again tell them one calendar sale means for you?
It means one Stella.
One and a half Stella.
One and a half Stellas, that's true. Go. So please, don't cut me off of my Stella.
No, I will not.
Okay, thank you, Nasser. San Francisco Formula One Group, SFF1.com. They get together, they drink, and they watch Formula One. Great, great group of people. Check it out. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. We want to mention our Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and MySpace. We're always there, chit-chatting, speaking with the people. Take a look and click We Love You. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email me at info@F1Weekly.com. Once again, please buy a couple of calendars and make us all happy here at F1Weekly.com. Thank you and good night.
Bye now. Good night.